You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by HuntStand. HuntStand is the number one hunting app in the country, and at only $29.99, HuntStand offers a ton of functionality for hunters all over the country. Whether you own your own property or strictly hunt public, you can choose from over a dozen base maps, view property ownership information, 3D mapping, local weather, log your sightings and harvest, as well as use their trail cam management software, and print maps from your hunt areas. Download it today at the Apple App Store or Google Play. HuntStand. Upgrade your arsenal.
Welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Riker, and Backcountry Rookies was designed to prepare, inspire, and educate hunters to head west for their backcountry big game hunt. Join us as we talk to some of the most experienced hunters in the West about their tips and tricks to help you along your journey to get out west for big game hunting. We also share some of our good, bad, and ugly experiences that we've had along the way. Kick back and enjoy the show. Hey, welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. Today I'm in Phoenix. I had to come out here for a little bit of business, and I took the opportunity to come over here to Marsupial Gear and talk with Jim Graham for a little bit. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. I've been here one other time, and Jim showed me around the shop, and I'm just impressed with the amount of products that they work on here and the amount of work that they do. So I thought it would be cool to record a podcast with Jim and talk about the current options that you can get from Marsupial as far as vinyl packs and all the other accessories that they make. And we're going to get a little insight on some of the upcoming items that they're working on. He's going to let us in on a little bit of a secret. So with that really quick intro, let me do a quick commercial from the sponsors. And when we come back, we'll have Jim on here from Marsupial Gear.
This podcast is sponsored by Go Hunt, Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting, and Vortex Optics. Check out Go Hunt Maps for all your scouting needs. Go Hunt Maps comes free with an insider account and offers amazing 3D maps on your desktop for e-scouting and the new mobile maps on your mobile device. Now you have all of the resources of Insider, filtering 2.0, strategy articles, draw odds, and more that you use for application season, and it's all paired with maps used for e-scouting and hunting. Insider is the all-inclusive tool for Western hunters. Use the promo code ROOKIES and get $50 in Go Hunt Gear Shop credit when you become an Insider today.
Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting. University of Elk Hunting provides you with immediate access to the most comprehensive and complete resource for increasing your elk hunting knowledge, confidence, and success. University of Elk Hunting now has all of those resources in the palm of your hand on a mobile app. Use the code ROOKIES and save $20 on your University of Elk Hunting membership today. Vortex Optics is an American-owned and veteran-owned company. Vortex Optics designs, engineers, produces, and distributes a complete line of premium sport optics, accessories, and apparel. They're dedicated to providing unrivaled customer service and exceptional quality. Vortex backs its products with unconditional, transferable, lifetime VIP warranty. If it breaks, they fix it or replace it. And remember, you can use the code ROOKIES and save 20% off of Vortex apparel. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. This will be super cool, I think.
Yeah.
So I feel really, really privileged right now. I'm the first podcast that Jim has been on. So
that is correct.
I feel pretty excited about that. That's pretty cool. I told him when I came in, I said, I'm not real sure why you haven't been on another podcast since he makes such great gear. We need to get people out there to understand how good his stuff is. So that's why he's on the show.
Yep.
I wanted to talk about, so probably one of the more famous, I guess, or more popular is a better term, is your bino harness.
Yep.
We're going to talk a lot about that, but first I jumped ahead of myself a little bit. I want to get your background and, you know, just hear a little bit about Jim and then Marsupial Gear. Where'd it come from? Where's the history on it?
So started this officially in 2015, so about 6 years now. It kind of was born from not finding a perfect vinyl harness that met my needs on the market. At the time, there was a lot of good options on the market, but nothing that was exactly how I wanted it. The main thing I was looking for was a pouch that I could drop my binoculars in and out of repetitively without messing around with the lid. Most of the binocular packs on the market at that time all have a lid that would lift up, and then when you pulled your binoculars out, it would cover the opening of the pouch. So that was the main thing I was looking for in a binocular pack, and I couldn't find anything at the time. I had always used a crooked horn harness or an elastic type harness. I think most of us have used at one point in our hunting career, which is 10 times better than a neck strap. It keeps your binoculars just on your chest, weight distributed, but with the elastic, it would ride up in the back of my neck. Hiking around, they'd bounce. You step off a ledge, they'd bounce, hit you in the chin. So they were good, but they weren't great. So they had quick access, but they didn't protect your binoculars. So I was looking for a blend of quick access like that, but also have protection that some of the binocular packs on the market did offer, but just didn't offer quick access, in my opinion. So it was just one of those things where, I don't know, I've always been one to kind of tinker around with ideas, and was just messing around with different materials that I found online. I don't know, I'd buy miscellaneous hardware off of eBay, go to Joann's, try to figure out how to sew something like that. My aunt helped me with like the very first rough prototype, and I kind of had a different design of what I wanted to do. I originally wanted to make just a Molly panel on your chest that you would essentially put different packs on. Mm-hmm. Because the other big thing is I had a fishing pack, I had a binocular pack, I had a camera pack. I have all these different packs, but they're all different systems, all different brands, and they didn't work and interchange. So my vision was eventually to make a chest pack system that was modular and interchangeable depending on what you're doing. So, you know, this weekend you're hunting, you have your binocular pack on. Next weekend you're fishing, you plug, take off your binocular pack, you plug in your fishing pack, you're good to go. You're utilizing one harness, which saves you money, and it's just the same system, so you're not changing around your gear all the time. So that was like the big picture. And then I was just in it for, I don't want to say a rude awakening, but it's a very steep learning curve getting into this. So I was, you know, considering teaching myself how to sew. I went to these quilting stores, you know, talking to these older ladies, seeing if they could help me with that. They all looked at me like I was crazy. Essentially ended up finding a contract sew shop in Phoenix, Arizona. And they actually would do, which I didn't even know existed, you know, just simple Google search, horrible website, happened to stumble across them. They were kind of in our backyard, had a consultation with them. They kind of helped me out with some prototypes and worked through that. And we did an initial run. I guess that would be the fast track version of how we got to our first ever binocular pack.
Was that first run that Molly gear?
No. So during the prototyping process, I kind of realized that was a pain in the butt. It was overdoing stuff that, you know, we could accomplish the same thing with essentially just four buckles that would disconnect and plug the pack in. So we eliminated that pretty quick just because, A, costs, it got way more expensive the more time and labor, especially with American manufacturing, gets very expensive very quick. So you have to try to figure out what you're trying to accomplish and then what is the most efficient way to get there with the least amount of materials and the lowest labor time. Yeah. And that's kind of what, working through those different prototypes and getting costing, we quickly shifted away from that and just got to the modular system with four buckles. So,
which is pretty effective. So right. I've got a vinyl harness and I've got a fishing pack at home, and right. you can swap those out.
And so you can, and we sell them on our website as a pack only option. I will say most people buy just a whole new system with another set of shoulder straps, but we do offer all of our products with a pack only option. So customers can buy different packs, but only use one harness. So, I mean, it'll save you $20 to $30 on a harness if you buy multiple packs, which you can add up, especially we have guys who are budget conscious building out their backcountry hunting kits. And so everybody seems to be on a budget, and you can put that money elsewhere as opposed to buying a separate harness every single time that you could disconnect and plug from one pack to another. So that was the grand idea. And then, you know, right now we have a couple different chest packs, and we plan on building that product line out as well. And so those will all interchangeably connect with those four buckles. So
let's talk about the chest pack, because you have evolved that pack
quite a bit.
Which, and let's talk about where it started out to where it is now.
Yeah, I should have grabbed one of our very first production runs to put side by side, because it's funny. And I remember getting that first one being like, holy
cow. Do you still have the first one?
I do. I have the first one that I use, which I think's here. It's at my house. But I do have one other one, I think, upstairs that is from the first run, which is really? It's got a couple of different things that I can pick out and know that's from the first run. So
did it, I want to get to the packs in a minute, yeah. But I think last time I was here, you told me a story that one of the first packs you ever made came mm-hmm. back in for some yep. repair or
so,
something.
Yeah. So one of the cool things, you know, we make every single pack here in Phoenix, Arizona, which we're very proud of to make every single pack, not only in-house, but obviously in the U.S. It's something, it's a very big part of our business and that something that will never change. Mm-hmm. And so the cool thing with that is we offer pretty much a lifetime warranty with all of our products. Aside from you setting it on fire and, you know, say, hey, mm-hmm. I burned my pack. Can you give me a new one? We'll do what we yeah. can to replace
it.
Yeah. yeah. And so, you know, not, maybe not quite the Vortex warranty, but yeah. pretty dang close. Yeah. And so we got a pack back from a customer who, yeah, I mean, there's just little things that we hadn't learned at the time to do this, reinforce it here or use this there. Or honestly, you just hunt hard with a piece of equipment for 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. And there's guys who hunt. I mean, their full-time job is what yeah, they do, right, and right. they put them through the ringer. So, you know, we use mil-spec materials on almost every single piece. We try to overbuild it to the point where it's not going to break, but it is nylon, and it can wear over time. And if we yeah. can fix it, we'll fix it. So, you know, even though ours, it is somewhat of an investment buying our products now, you know, you're buying a product theoretically for life that we can fix and repair as much as possible before yeah. you get to a certain point where, you know, it's either A, not cost effective to repair. we've had all sorts of random things come back in from, you know, pack rats chewing through straps that we'll fix, or I think a guy fell out of a tree stand, his harness, you know, I don't want to say we saved his life, but his harness got caught on the ladder halfway down, ripped, and then he hit the ground. So maybe it slowed his fall down enough there, that he didn't.
At least, yeah, saved a leg or
saved
something.
Saved a life, yeah. right?
Well, okay, so, cool. Yeah. So let's talk about the evolution of it then, because mm-hmm. I know I had one of the original, well, not even the original.
But you have, we have two, you know, we offer two different binocular packs mm-hmm. on our website now. We call our standard binocular pack, which is, we'll call our original binocular pack, and then we have our enclosed binocular pack. And as you can tell, we're very creative with our names for our yeah. binocular packs.
Well, but you know what? I appreciate the yeah. how that works, because some of these companies...
You start throwing names out
there. I don't even know where they come up with
different mountain ranges, and it's like, I don't even know how to pronounce that. Exactly. So we kind of keep it simple.
Yeah, enclosed and standard. That works great.
And I do I laugh when people are always like, so what's the big difference between the two? And it's like, I try to put it in the title.
Let me show you the names. Yeah. Let me show you the names again.
But, the big, I guess, you know, that when we going back to that first pack, so – I wanted something that was easy to use, folded forward, and stayed open. And so what we found a really effective way to do that was to utilize magnets. And that, as we'll probably talk about later, people, it is great, but there's obviously downsides to everything, single mm-hmm. thing, and it's not a one-size-fits-all. But so our pack functions with magnets on the top and magnets on the bottom, and that lid will fasten up and over the binoculars on the top. Or when you've pulled the lid down, it will stay open, and you essentially have an open mm-hmm. bucket on your chest to pull your binoculars in and out of. And so that is what made our binocular pack unique. I think the only other pack to really utilize magnets on the market at that point was Badlands. And Badlands, they're probably first three binocular packs on the market, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but theirs was like
big.
Yeah, well, it was like two trash can lids coming together.
But it was, great though, because it had a full seal. I mean, there's pros to everything, right?
Yeah.
And so it was great because it offered great protection, but you could not open it. You could open it about 45 degrees, maybe. Mm-hmm. Pull your binos out, but a lot of times it would snap shut, and so it'd be this loud snap when it closed, and you couldn't keep it open. So you're still constantly opening and closing your binocular pack, and that was something I had one of those, and I was just like, I liked the idea behind it, but I just hated how much I was opening and closing mm-hmm. it. And so they utilized magnets as well too. So, but ours I felt were completely different because the lid was much more flexible and folded all the way down and stayed open that way. So. That was what we came to market with, and you know, we made 100 packs, and I remember getting those from our production facility and, you know, bringing them home with my wife and like, how the heck are we ever going to sell 100 packs?
Yeah, now we got them. Now what do we do with
and
them?
So it's like, cool. And so, you know, that's just kind of how it started. And at that point I was, I think still possibly working. So my family had a commercial roofing business, was doing that for a few years. As my dad, you know, we kind of had a conversation where, you know, just the trajectory of where it was going. He was getting close to retirement age. The industry as a whole was changing. You know, I hate to compare it to this, but in a sense of, you know, the type of roofing that we had done was very long lasting roofing. And it was people remove, the market shifting to a temporary roofing doesn't last as long, gets burnt out, especially here in Arizona. And so the industry as a whole is changing. I didn't quite have as much of a passion for the roofing industry, hot tar roofing, Arizona. You can do the math. It's pretty, pretty rough. So anyways, we had, you know, my dad went through a process selling the business, and then I jumped from there to working for the government DES for a year and a half as I was really getting this off the ground. And yeah, so I would, you know, we created a website, started selling it through Instagram as much as we could, marketing it, but I'd meet people on my lunch break. I would drive across town, do a lot of parking lot transactions, you know, selling binocular packs out of my truck, out of my house, like a drug deal, but
lucrative business.
Yeah. You're the guy with the pack. Yeah. So, you know, maybe it's from my Craigslist days of selling things, but yeah, so I met a lot of people, especially here in Arizona, face to face. So it's fun to see those customers circle back and be like, hey, I met you in the barbecue place parking lot or, you know, wherever. Funny. So, that was the first run of packs. And then, yeah, I guess I don't know if you want me to keep going with the, you know, how that progressed or then.
No,
you know,
we can move on. I mean, yeah. I think that's just, I think the hustle is a cool story though.
Yeah.
That early on, starting with 100. How long did it take to sell that first 100?
Gosh, I'd probably have to, probably a couple months, 2-3 months.
Oh, okay.
So I mean, quick. I mean, all things considering, not that long. Because the thing is now, man, the bino pack market is so saturated now, which is awesome. There's lots of options for people, but at the time there really was only a couple on the market. It was, you know, Alaska Guide Creations first, first ever bino pack. FHF makes great bino pack out of Montana, and Badlands, and I really don't know of any other ones on the, Kuyu might have had theirs at that point. I don't know, there was a handful on the market, not many. Now there are so many on the market, which is good, but there were less. And so I don't know, it was a new item, new product. Binocular packs were just becoming more popular, and so we got kind of lucky at that time frame to bring it to market. That, you know, we moved them faster than I thought, you know.
Yeah.
And this was always meant to just be somewhat of a side hustle. I'd have a full-time job.
Cool. How'd that work out, that side hustle?
Yeah. And now it's consumes our life. Yeah. Which is great, but it's definitely a fun grind for sure.
Yeah. Well, with competition comes growth, I think. And so that moved you into the transition, I guess. Mm-hmm.
And so, and we still make our standard binocular pack. So we've evolved that a little bit over time, and that's changed over time based on customer feedback. So I'm very big on interacting with our customers, hearing what they're saying, what can we improve upon. Now, you can't make every single change that every person asked you to do, but you hear the same thing over and over again, and there's obviously something to it. And some of those hurdles initially was we just couldn't afford to do it. So I mean, I bootstrapped this from the beginning.
Sure.
And so it's like, you know, we changed things. We didn't have all the colors. We didn't do matching textiles and stuff that went with it because I couldn't afford to get the color matched items. And so you'd have a lot of black trims and things like that. And I couldn't get certain materials because A, I didn't know it existed at the time, or B, I couldn't either afford it, or there was a handful of things. And so everything that we took from the business, we just dumped right back into it and just kind of as our little side hustle and just kept pouring it back into it. And, you know, you could buy now twice the amount of packs that you just bought, and you just kept doing that and doing that until it keeps growing. But so it evolved. You know, one of the first things the bigger thing we did, we moved buckles on the top. So they used to kind of come off the top at a side, but then they'd twist. And then the interior, we had a slick nylon liner, which was nice. But then in cold weather, we found out it crinkled. And so people wanted a quieter pack. So then we put a fleece liner in. And I think when we added the fleece liner, we added like a mesh pocket on the back. So it slowly evolved. And yeah, you know, we get customers kind of every now and then jab us for like, oh, you're constantly changing your packs, but it's evolving with customer feedback. So we always do like to have a close feel with what our customers are doing, how can we improve it, and then, you know, make slight modifications where we can.
And I think, so there's also, I'm looking at this pack that's sitting
so
in front of us now.
Closed
this
pack.
One is, things evolve with additional accessories too, right? So now you have a mole on the bottom.
Correct.
And you have bear spray.
Bear spray.
Pouches. You have a
bear spray.
Pistol.
Pistol. You can technically attach one of our large zippered pouch fits nicely on the bottom. We probably have about four more accessories that we, you know, have purposely, you know, that's in the, you know, we don't have prototypes yet, but it's something that we're going to be coming out with. Probably another basement style pocket, but instead of our large zippered pouch, it's going to be more of one that has a full zip across the front that'll kind of drop down. Maybe you can put a rangefinder in there, or just additional, you know, possible pouch types, extra storage. Because
Bud Light?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Right?
All right. As long as we can fit one of those in there, we're good.
Because we try to make our pack as small and slimline as possible. Right. You know, it doesn't have all the pockets. You know, there's multiple packs in the market that offer different things. We try to come into the market being small, compact, and then you can add accessories as you want. So it's not a one-size-fits-all.
Right.
So we have that, and then, you know, we basically just listen to what other customers would like to hear. People have talked about adding like a muff to the bottom of hand warmers. You know, we added our bow hanger hooks on the bottom of the hook.
That's what gloves are for.
Right. But there are certain situations where, you know, a muff comes in handy. Oh yeah. But so our bow hanger hooks hang down from the bottom. And then, you know, there's a handful of different things that we're kind of looking at, like the tactical market and kind of implementing that mm-hmm. and crossing over into the hunting industry, since people love to carry all sorts of stuff with them out in the woods, we find. So
how did that creating the enclosed, how was that development process?
So that was a multi-year process. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's something that people don't quite realize. Sometimes, you know, certain quick accessory, we can crank out super fast. Certain things like this, the enclosed pack was probably 3 years in the making, really. And I have, you know, a box full of failed prototypes that didn't work. And it's, you know.
Real quick, for the listeners, the standard pack had open sides.
It has open sides. So it has lower sidewalls on the sides. The benefit of that is you technically can get your thumb in a little bit faster from the side of the binocular pack. With the enclosed pack, it's got taller sidewalls that are structured and a lid that will overlap on the side. So it creates a full containment system, works really good at keeping the fine dust out, especially here in Arizona. Mm-hmm. If you're riding in a side-by-side from A to B, it will keep your optics cleaner.
Yeah.
Our standard pack does a great job protecting your optics as well, but there's certain roads here in Arizona, you're New Mexico, you know, you used to go from A to B. By the time you get to your hunting spot, you are filthy.
Yeah.
And so dust could find its way into it. And that kind of was what was the reason for
it. But now you got to reach in to grab them instead of
you
just
do,
swooping
in. It's still a relatively easy hand movement. And, it's, you know, we had some people who had used our standard for so long and that it was very foreign to them at first, just from muscle memory. But then they would switch to it and they're like, oh, I don't even think about it now. And so it's still one-handed, still easy to use, but it is a different hand movement grabbing it from the standard. So the standard does have open sides, which then again, too, in certain situations, if you're hunting in really wet conditions, sometimes fogging, because the binos can vent a little bit better, they don't fog as much. Yeah. So, you know, it just depends. There's pros and cons for both packs depending on where you hunt. And so, we just wanted to create options for our customers to essentially choose one based on their hunting conditions and their hunting style.
Yeah. Well, they're super – like I said, I've had both.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And I was going to say, too, and there's a price difference between the two. The materials that we use on our enclosed are more expensive. These are more of a pain in the butt to sew, I'll be honest. It's a lot more technical. Not all of our sewing operators can sew our enclosed packs like they can our standard pack. The fabric stretch, so it's a lot more user feel as opposed to, hey, this fabric doesn't stretch. They meet up at the end, and it's a even seam, whereas this, you can get wonky real quick. And the labor is quite a bit more in these enclosed packs, and then the materials cost more, too.
And they come with an upgrade to the shoulder straps.
So, yeah, we kind of created.
And they had that mole system on the bottom, which
the standards did not at first, but we got enough feedback, we added them on there. Yeah, so it's tough. We probably create more issues for ourselves sometimes. We're giving people too many options, right? It's a chest pack, right? It doesn't need to be a full-on pack frame system. But we do allow people to tinker, toy, and mod, you know, make the system modular and build it how they want. So sometimes we give people too many options. So with the enclosed packs, we just said the padded mesh harness is included with that, which is our upgraded harness.
That's very nice.
Technically, you could buy the pack-only option and buy our webbing harness, and people Frankenstein packs out however they want all the time. But so that comes with our padded mesh harness.
Yeah. Okay. So another thing I wanted to talk about, too, mm-hmm. and this is cool because I've got one. It's the Kryptek. You did a special run of Kryptek Altitude and Highlander.
Yes.
And I thought that those packs turned out phenomenal.
They did turn out very nice.
So I thought that they turned out very nice. How did that come about?
So
how did you get linked up with Kryptek to make
Kryptek that? Guys have always been awesome to us. When we first came out with our binocular packs, we had them in three colors. We had Kryptek Highlander, Kryptek Typhon, which is their black color, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then Foliage. So you can't just go buy fabric in any color you want. You pretty much have to buy fabric that is stocked somewhere, unless you want to buy very high minimums. Obviously, us starting this from scratch, we couldn't go pick whatever color we wanted. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of forced to use military colors, mil-spec colors, because that is what is stocked for all these government contracts. And it's just the tactical industry in general. Those are the materials that we're using. So we wanted a camo pattern, didn't really want to use multicam at the time, and came across Kryptek, and obviously familiar with it from the hunting industry. And we were able to use that camo pattern early on. At that time, they weren't really requiring licensing fees, and they were great to work, let us use it initially. And then we got linked up with them probably within the first year. We had sold a pack to some guy who guided one of the head guys over at Kryptek. Mm-hmm. They were like, "What the heck is this?" Reached out to us. And so we kind of had a cool relationship with the guys over for a while.
Yeah.
And so we've just always been in contact with them. They've sent us, I think their Yeti is their white pattern. I don't know. We've made some custom packs for them over the years where they'd send us fabric, we'd do it. And so when it came to our enclosed packs, they knew that we came out with this, but the material that we buy, so we use like a stretch material, durable stretch material in our enclosed packs. Couldn't get that in the Kryptek pattern. Well, obviously the guys at Kryptek work with a handful of different companies. They did a run of this fabric in the Highlander and Altitude, had a limited amount of it, and asked if we were interested in making a run. And so we purchased some yardage of it. The problem with it is much more expensive than our standard colors. So we have a hard time keeping our standard stuff in stock. So it's hard to go out and invest in a ton of this fabric, but we bought a good chunk of it, and we figured we'd do a run of that and just see how it went. And it sold out much faster than we had expected.
I was going to say, I think it went pretty well.
Yeah. And it's like, we have a handful of buddies where I'm always like, I don't know. It'll last through the weekend is my thought or whatnot. And it was gone in, I think, an hour and a half, all of them.
Yeah. I texted 90% you that day. Something about the Altitude, and you said, no, those are
Altitude. Done. Altitude was gone minutes. In like 15, 20 minutes. Yeah, it was crazy.
Gone.
And so we're always like completely humbled by this whole experience and how much it's grown from, what it was and what it still is.
Hustling
and,
at the barbecue.
Yeah,
shop
I
down
mean,
the
it's
street,
like, you
right?
know, even my, the guy I buy hardware from, you know, he's just a funny guy. And, you know, I met him. He happened to be in town, you know, meeting a big client of his out here. And, you know, I met him on my lunch break from a different job at Kane's Chicken Fingers. And, you know, they're looking at me like I'm nobody. And I am nobody, but it was just fun to meet them. And now, you know, I'm one of his fairly consistent customers who orders a good amount of raw materials from him each year. And so he always goes back to the Kane's Chicken Fingers. How we met. So it's fun to see how much it's evolved over the years. And
Well, good. Certainly congratulations to you guys.
Thanks.
It's definitely good to see growth.
Been fun,
especially from Arizona, man. This is my favorite state, so I always like it when good things come out of Arizona.
Yeah, and I always wanted to, you know, I think my dream growing up, always hunting and fishing with my dad, I always wanted to work for an outdoor gear company. And to me, that always sounded the coolest thing as possible. And really in Arizona, there's not, I mean, you got Ruger, you have,
Outdoorsman,
right? And then, Gore is in Arizona.
Are they here?
Yeah, I think they're up north. And so there's a handful of companies, but not, you know, you're the big companies. And so when I had walked into, you know, still not really knowing what I was getting myself into when I started all of it, I walked into that first contract sewing facility, and I didn't realize that most companies use different facilities throughout the U.S. to make their products. Now, they're all made in the U.S., but very few people make their own products actually in-house. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'd seen a couple companies that I was, I think at the time I was seeing the neoprene scope covers that I'm blanking on the name, Scope Coat was being made there. And it was like they were these loopholed ones that were getting branded right there. And it was like, they're pumping them out. And I was like, holy cow. I had no idea that, well, A, Scope Coat was an Arizona based company. And that B is like, you know, they were printing all these different logos on it. And I was like, I had no idea this existed. And so when I kind of walked in that sewing facility, my eyes kind of like popped out of my head and go, holy cow. Like, this is like, I was like a kid in a candy store, just seeing these products being made from scratch because I've always tinkered with stuff. And so, that kind of at that moment, it was like, this is what I want to do. And how do I get to do that? And so I tried getting hired by that sewing facility, which is a long story, and they ended up going out of business. But before they could even bring me on, and which was another big hurdle to get over and try to figure out how to keep moving when they went out of business. But once I saw that I didn't realize that, you know, companies, how many products were made like that. I just knew that's what I kind of wanted to do. So it kind of lit a fire in me just to figure out how to make it happen. So.
Yeah. I think there's facilities all over the place.
Oh, you have no idea.
You have no idea. Yeah. People
being
have
made
no
where. Yeah. And so I've got to see behind that curtain now, which is kind of, you know, so I sit back and smile sometimes when you see things and you just in the industry as a whole, but, it's very cool to also just see raw full rolls of fabric come in, get cut, get sewn, and turn into a finished product. There's something really cool about that.
Last time I was here, we walked back there and in your warehouse, and you were like, right. Yeah, look at all this, and just piles of fabric. And I was like, man.
Dude, oh, it's crazy.
Yeah, that's cool.
Tons and tons of raw material. And that's what, especially this past year, has been fun with COVID, that our supply chain just freaking halted.
Yeah, that was something I was going to touch on too. I know when we were talking through the notes, I didn't really mention it, but just how to keep a business surviving during COVID. How did you guys address that and overcome that hurdle?
So when it all kind of first started, you know, I think everybody's kind of skeptical, not really sure what to think of it all. And, you know, my wife and I at that point in January of 2020 is when I had fully branched off from the prior sewing facility that I had ended up running for the past prior three years. So my wife and I were all in. We just rented out, a building, 5-year lease. Pretty much had taken all of our entire savings that we've saved with Marsupial and dumped into this building, just bought all the sewing machines, everything. And then COVID hits and, you know, you hear on the news, businesses being forced to shut down and all that. And so my personality is no one can tell me that I have to shut my business unless I genuinely believe in that. And so without going into the whole rabbit hole of COVID, we talked to our employees, got on the same page with them. We lost one or two who, for childcare reasons, had to quit because their kids, no one could watch their kids
anymore. Yeah, not
going
to school, so they can't. Yeah,
there are definitely hurdles in that regard. But all of our employees wanted to work. We wanted to work. I think there's something true to, obviously, the American spirit. Like, hey, we want to go to work and not just sit home and collect a paycheck for sitting at home. And so we have an awesome group of team members here. And at that time, I think we only had 6 or 7 employees, and they all wanted to show for work. We wanted to keep our doors open. So, we put a sign on the door saying, hey, no customers coming in. But, we spread everybody out. My wife and I, clean the toilets, do everything, wipe everything down with Lysol. Yeah. Every employee's got, they're disinfected. And so, with sewing machines, everybody's spread out as it is. So,
there's more than 6 or 7 people back there now.
It's grown quite a bit. I think we're up to now almost 30 people.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
That's amazing.
And so we're still trying. It's been, and that was the other thing, trying to find employees during COVID was very tough. So, and then the whole industry, as far as sewing goes, everybody starts on masks, gowns, things like that. So it's hard to find sewers with experience as opposed to someone who would sew their finger.
That's cool. Well, I'm glad you guys survived.
Yeah, so we survived it. And then, the outdoor industry blew up during COVID because everybody was forced to stay home. And what did they do? Go outdoors. And so we also launched our enclosed pack. So it was a perfect storm of, I think, people, the outdoor industry, from everybody else I talked to in the industry, getting a ton of new people going out into the industry as a whole. And then our new product, we just haven't been able to keep up with it. So we've been very blessed, very lucky to stay busy when, some businesses, had to close and there's nothing they could do about it, which is horrible. So luckily we were able to keep our head down and keep doing our thing. We didn't switch to masks or anything like that. People had asked us to sew, and we just figured stick with what we're good at.
There's already a pile of people doing
that. Just stick with what we're good
at. Well, speaking of staying busy, I'm looking at some cool stuff hanging on the walls over here. What do you guys got coming up for new products? What's new?
So obviously we're chest pack company. That's kind of the direction we want to stay in. People ask us to make backpacks. Once people realize we sew stuff, they're like, oh, make, X, Y, Z. And so we have a pretty clear vision of where we're going. We want to continue with the chest pack market. Right now we offer our binocular pack, 2 versions, a Joey pack, which is kind of a low profile chest pack, and then our fishing pack, which people use for a myriad of things. But, we're going to expand that chest pack out, a couple different versions for different hunting scenarios. And then I was showing you some of our stuff bags, or we'll call them like pull-out bags. We'll have a couple different versions of those. There's a lot of those on the market that are great. We're going to be offering some in different materials, a durable stretch that we use for our binocular packs. So we'll have some pull-outs in those sizes. We have some really cool transparent material that's very durable as well. So those ones are great. Different sizes. You can put a bunch of different stuff inside your backpack, organize your backpack, but still see what's in those pull-out bags. We are going to be launching some game bags. Those are going to be coming out too. Lots of good options there. But once again, we try to differentiate ourselves with craftsmanship, and the material that we're using is super durable. So excited to come out with that this fall. And then one of the things that I haven't hinted on too much in talking outside of here is we kind of have a whole modular lumbar pack system coming out. So that will be built out to be a bunch of different have a bunch of different applications. You know, we'll have a, you know, a run and gun archery pack, you know, lumbar pack system, lightweight, something you don't want to pack meat with, something where, hey, especially here in Arizona, we have such awesome over-the-counter archery opportunities. There's a lot of times where I'm pig hunting or deer hunting in January where it's like, I'm dropping my pack frame and then going on a stalk. Mm-hmm. And then 500 yards later, I'm like, I really wish I had my pack, but I didn't, you know,
or at least some water.
Yeah. Right? So, yeah. You know, we have a hydration pack coming out, and just kind of a whole modular system that'll essentially be more of a run and gun, maybe archery elk, you know, some, at least here in Arizona where you're not backpacking in necessarily miles and miles, where if you kill an animal, hey, I can go back out, go grab my truck or go grab a pack frame and get to that. But I want a comfortable pack system that can carry the necessities with me without being too big and bulky and not allow you to be nimble. So that, and then the cool thing, everything that we do is modular and has synergies and works with each other. So our bino pack will click into that whole yoke system. And so you won't have to wear a harness underneath it. And so everything, Tinker Toys, which once again, not to make a chest pack too complicated, but we really are trying to be the pouch chest pack company that offers something to everyone. And have a bunch of different modular systems that you can kind of build it out exactly for your hunting style. And so,
well, you already do that too. Cause like you offer two different sizes for your range finder.
Oh, two different sizes for range finder. Yep.
For range finder pouches, three sizes for, is it soon to be four?
We have the,
is that right?
I think we're going to end up just revising our large
size.
Last thing I want to do now is add another variation. So I think we're just going to be, modifying our large pack and our enclosed bino pack system to this new size, which we have sitting here, which fits the Maven B5s, because there's really not a pack on the market that fits these right now. And then some of the bigger 15s too, we're a little tight in our large. Once again, customer feedback, guys let us know, hey, you know, it fits, but I'm kind of having to wrestle these 15s out of the pack.
Do the UHD 18s fit in that?
They do. Well, they will fit in this, yes. Yeah. They technically fit in our current one now, but it's pretty tight.
That's a
yeah.
Big
and so like yeah. Sometimes a couple guys have bought them and I was like, I don't know if I'd run like that, but they're like, no, this is what I want. And they get it in there and it works. So this new large will fit those. And some of the, it's not so much always the size, it's the tackiness of the armor on some of them. So like the Loophole, the SIG, really grippy armor on them. So they catch that fleece. Same with the Saguaro. While they fit, it's sometimes that armor on them, especially when they're brand new, just grabs that fleece. So a little more room. We didn't increase it that much, half inch deeper, half inch wider. And that's like the Goldilocks of perfect sizing to kind of fit all the, it's tough to have three different sizes fit. I mean, what, 10 different binocular companies and all their sizes.
Oh, yeah. And multiple different types of binos for each one.
So it's tough to fit every binocular perfectly, but these three sizes cover about 95% of them really well.
And then extra pouches, you got your small zipper, large zipper pouches, so
yep,
they're already really we got
a lot of options now. But we want to keep building that out because you know we just want to keep offering options for people. And the cool thing about our pouches is not only do they work with our packs, but they work with backpacks, or you know, you can take them a lot and attach them to other products. Or heck, it doesn't even bother me when people attach our pouches to a different bino pack. I don't care. It's whatever works best for you. And if you have a different bino pack that works awesome for you, fantastic, use that. But hey, our rangefinder pouch might work better than theirs, or they might not offer one. So we really want to be known as the pouch company, kind of playing on that marsupial name.
I was glad to see you guys add the larger rangefinder pouch.
Yeah.
I was really glad because I run that Razor 4K.
Yep.
And it fit in the small.
It fit, but it was tight.
Yeah, and sometimes, and there's different catch, and you end up tugging on it a little bit. And now that thing, it's
it slides in and out. Yeah. And that's where some of these, there's a slight sewing tolerance with each product that we sew. I mean, we are human, so each pouch will differ very a little bit. And so some pouches, you know, that Razor would fit a little bit better than maybe the one that you had. And so, but another one that came out in the market was the Maven RF1, and really no one made a pouch that fit it. And we had heard feedback from the Razor is that they were a little tight too. So that was something that's like, hey, let's just make a bigger rangefinder pouch real quick. And because we make everything in-house now, it was a relatively easy thing to do, and we can throw it on the production floor. And heck, we had, I think from the time Maven sent me a 3D prototype of that rangefinder, we had,
man, they didn't even let you play with the real
thing. No, I'm not. They were selling so many that they didn't even have a sample one to be able to loan out to me. So you know, I've met a lot of cool people from this, and another guy in the industry made the connection, and he's like, I think it was his idea to do the 3D prototype. And so they printed me off one and sent it, and we made a pouch for it. And I think by the time we got that sample in hand to finished one was like probably a month or less. So pretty quick turn time as far as mass producing items. So that's where, circling back, people don't realize how long it takes from sometimes either idea or initial prototype to actual production, and then production quality, and then getting it into production, and just that life cycle. It's a very long life cycle.
Oh yeah, it's
and expensive too.
Cutting and your
the tooling, the way that we cut our stuff is that it's an investment in some of the tooling, so we can cut it consistently and a lot of it at once. And it's a big investment. So A, if you throw it in something that's a dud, you don't get your payback on it. And then, it's just, you know, not only that, but then it also eats up production time on the floor. I only have so many sewers. So, you know, what's the most important thing to have on the production floor? So,
right. Well, you do you guys do a good job of keeping up, or at least trying to keep up as best you can.
We're doing what we can to grow. So
I like the updates that you do too, on Instagram. Stories or whatever.
I try to
keep everybody up to date on what's going on.
I mean, we run it pretty lean here. And so most of the time of the day we're running around doing a bunch of different things. But I try to, one of the things I'm trying to be a little bit more intentional about is kind of showing people more behind the scenes. And I'm talking with we have employee meetings all the time, and I'm trying to gauge them. How comfortable are you guys with me shoving a camera in your face and showing you? Because it's incredible what our sewing team members are able to make. I mean, they are artists, honestly, for what they're able to do. And so I really want to share with everybody how these things are made on a daily basis, and the time, the energy, and the effort that goes into this. And it's an actual human, it's an American citizen who's making these for you. It's really cool. And then also, you know, sharing that feedback to our employees, that how much our customer base appreciates what they do, because it's cool. It's neat to see the stuff made here from scratch, and, you know, not just something that shows up from overseas, and not
wherever.
That anything's wrong with that in ways too, but it's cool in this day
and
age.
It's still cool nice to get that tag that says made in the USA.
So
it's it means a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's all I got. What's your hunting plans for the year?
So this fall will be pretty busy for me in a couple ways. So I was lucky enough to draw an elk tag in New Mexico, a rifle bull tag. And their hunts are cool because they're a little bit earlier than they would be here in Arizona. So I think my rifle bull tag is like October 9th. Not the best unit, but I've hunted it a couple times and I've killed a couple elk in there. So I'm excited for that. I'm hoping they'll still be bugling, which is the last.
They might be. Last year they were.
The last bull I killed in there was an end of October hunt, and he bugled.
Really?
He bugled, and that's how I was able to locate where he was at. So I'm hoping 20 days earlier, you know, they should still be last year they were at a really late rut.
It
could be prime rut, so I'm really excited for that. I did draw an early archery tag here in Arizona. That one, I'm not sure if I'm going to be doing that one because my wife is expecting our third child end of August, and so I really would want to dedicate.
Well, it's number three, right?
We're just numb to time. Yeah, and so
tell her to text you.
Trying to squeeze an antelope hunt in between that elk hunt. So I think she is definitely a saint to put up with me on all my hobbies. And so
for sure,
might turn in the Arizona tag just because the Arizona has that point guard. And so I'd actually be able to get my bonus points back, and I should be able to draw that same archery tag the next year. So now that I have that elk tag in New Mexico, it kind of doesn't hurt as bad to turn that tag in. And I really want to dedicate 2 weeks to that archery tag anyways. And so just with the baby number three being a couple weeks old, and that's the tough part about this industry too. Is, hey, it's like start a hunting business to go hunting more. And it's really, that's our busiest time of year.
Oh,
so,
I'm sure it is. It's tough.
It's absolutely nuts. You know, from once August hits, it's ridiculous. So
I always think that's funny too, and I always hear people say, "Man, I just love to work for Game and Fish, or you know, to be outside. Why would you want to work?
Yeah,
there are the dudes that are out patrolling.
And yeah, I see even the guys same. You know, it's like, you know, I don't know. I think I could ever get into guiding because I think it'd ruin you on hunting. I mean, obviously, you know, there's obviously the benefits of being out there, but I think doing anything as a profession sometimes diminishes it and takes the glamour off of it. But I mean, we're removed enough because we're in manufacturing, but it's our busiest time of year, so it's hard for me to sneak out, especially with small business. You know, you have your hands in so many aspects of the business, it's hard to play hooky and, you know, leave the place.
Good luck to you in everything, business, hunting, new child coming. You got a lot going on this year, so good luck.
It's fun. So it's very we're very blessed with everything we have going on. It's a I'm excited for all the new products that we have coming out and just the support me we too. Have from all of our – yeah, so we're hoping that we can continue to stay relevant, provide good quality products, and then good customer service. And those you just do that, and I feel like you can have a good, successful business.
Go home and sleep good at night, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so, what's the website, Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff?
Where website, marsupialgear.com. Instagram is just marsupialgear. Those are really the two. I think we have a Facebook. I'll be the first to tell you I'm horrible at it. I think I press a button from Instagram that posts it to Facebook. And I'll log in there once a week and see the messages and reply to those and tell people I'm sorry for missing their message. But, so marsupialgear.com. Instagram is marsupialgear. It's where I'm the most active of anywhere. And so
TikTok.
No, I haven't got there yet. I can't. The day I can hire a social media person will be a great day that I can throw my phone away or put it away at least in the evenings and stuff like that.
It is. That's nice.
You got it. It's a necessary evil, but it's a great way to network with people, which is awesome. We couldn't have done it without social media, but I would prefer not to be on TikTok and doing some dancing video.
I don't want to see you on there.
I don't want to see me either.
I'll sell my marsupial.
Yeah, I think my wife would leave me. So.
Well, good deal, man. Thank you very much for taking your time today. I know I caught you on a busy day.
No,
so
it's always good. I appreciate catch up. That. So thanks for having me on.
You bet, man. Out of here.
Thank you for listening to the Backcountry Rookies podcast. Don't forget to look us up on social media. We are Backcountry Rookies on all the spots. Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and we also have the Backcountry Rookies Nation, which is a private group on Facebook. So thanks to Go Hunt, Elk 101, Vortex Optics, and Canyon Coolers for sponsoring the show. Remember, when you use the code ROOKIES, you get special deals at all of those companies. You get $50 in gear shop credit when you become a Go Hunt Insider. Save $20 on the University of Elk Hunting from Elk 101. 20% off any Vortex apparel. And now you can save 10% off Canyon Coolers. Just use the code ROOKIES at any of those places and get special deals. Thanks for listening. Come back next week. Out of here.